In the heart of Indonesia, nestled among lush landscapes and ancient traditions, there existed a village with a secret. The villagers spoke in hushed tones about the legend that haunted their nights, the legend of the Kuntilanak. Among the villagers, an old woman named Mumbakra had lived the longest and claimed to have encountered the Kuntilanak herself. She recounted her tale to eager listeners gathered around the flickering flame of an oil lamp. Decades ago, when Mumbakra was but a young girl, she and her friends had ventured into the dense woods surrounding the village. They were drawn by the mystery of an abandoned house said to be haunted by the Kuntilanak. The air was thick with humidity as they pushed through the overgrown foliage, their laughter masking an undercurrent of fear. As they approached the decrepit house, shadows seemed to dance along the edges of their vision. The wind whispered secrets through the cracks in the time-worn walls. With each creak of the floorboards, their hearts pounded in unison. Suddenly, a ghostly figure materialized before them. Kuntilanak. Her eyes glowed with an otherworldly light, and her mournful wail pierced the silence. Panic seized the group, and they fled from the haunted house, their footsteps echoing through the night. Mumbakra claimed that from that night forward, the Kuntilanak had chosen her as a messenger to the living. Whenever the ghostly apparition wanted to communicate with the villagers, she would appear to Mumbakra in her dreams, her ethereal presence leaving an indelible mark on the old woman's soul. As objects moved on their own and eerie whispers floated through the air, fear tightened its grip on the community. One night, the village chief, Bakwi Dodo, decided to confront the spirit, armed with a mixture of courage and trepidation. He entered the abandoned house where the legend began. As he stepped inside, the air grew colder, and a soft, haunting melody played in the background. In the dim light, she materialized, her appearance both terrifying and mesmerizing. Hello, good evening. Selamat malam semuanya, and welcome back to the Under the Moonlight podcast. Thank you for joining us again for another eventful evening. This is your host, Shaniva speaking, and today we're talking about ghosts, or should I say, hantu, in Indonesia. The short story you just heard was suggested by a fellow listener, the lovely Mari, and was created by Gwen over at the Medium blog. So, Indonesia is a country made up of a large and colorful tapestry of people. According to the Central Statistics Agency of Indonesia, 1,331 ethnic groups live on Indonesian soil. So it's safe to say that Indonesia contains many cultures, languages, peoples, and their stories, specifically as it pertains to today's topic, ghost stories. Despite Islam's large presence within Indonesia, the relegation of local beliefs as mere customs or adats during Suharto's developmental regime, and recent Islamist movements wanting more pure orthodox religious practice by removing elements considered superstitious or magical, the belief in spirits, ghosts, or the supernatural persists. Likely due to Indonesia's history of religious contact in which local magical beliefs and practices are synthesized into the framework of world religions like Islam, and also because of the unique character of Indonesian Islam, but also because of Islam's own familiar relationship with the supernatural. In Indonesia, there are many ghosts. There's the trickster ghost, Gundurua, known to shapeshift into a young man and impregnate women. The Juruk Purut, the headless horseman type ghost that haunts Juruk Purut Cemetery in Jakarta, alongside his fiercely loyal midnight black dog. Or the Tuyul, which is a toddler-like ghost with chalk-white skin and is the spirit of an unborn child from miscarriage or abortion. Or the Bebe Gumbul, or the sweet maiden of Ancol Bridge, Simanis Jembatan Ancol. Like the other ghosts or hantu, the main story stars of today's episode, the Kuntilanak and Sunda Bolong, originate from various parts of Indonesia. But due to their adoption into wider media, it has opened their stories to various interpretations. The Kuntilanak or Pontianak, as she is known famously across Malaysia and Indonesia, is believed to originate from Borneo and often features in Indonesian horror films. She became the Kuntilanak after dying during childbirth and then started haunting pregnant women and those in labor. She became a jealous woman spirit that is a threat to newborn babies. She's known to have long hair and wear a white dress. One knows she's coming when you can smell Kamboja flowers in the air and hear her high-pitched laughter. It is said one can vanquish her by stabbing a nail into her head. And then there's the Sunda Bolong, who resembles the Kuntilanak. as she too wears a white dress, has long hair, and a mutilated face. Yet they differ in that Sun Dobolong has a large hole in her back and is a vengeful spirit who died during childbirth that resulted from rape. She now haunts men who wander alone at night and is also taught to steal newborn babies. And then there's also Simani's Jembatan Ancol, or the Sweet Maiden of Ancol Bridge, whose story is said to be based on a true story during the time of colonial Batavia. She too was victimized, as she, a beautiful young girl known as the Village Flower, was raped and murdered. Her death was never investigated, and the perpetrators never punished. Since then, while in traditional Javanese clothing and enveloped by her long gleaming hair, she haunts men who cross the Ancol Bridge at night. According to Andalas and others, folktales contain the cultural essence or cultural DNA of a people that are passed down as cultural treasures, and they can help us understand what makes a community tick, especially in Indonesia, where these tales are used to entertain as well as educate. It's then not too far-fetched to think that they highlight certain issues in Indonesian society and serve as warnings. The Kuntilanak, Sun Dobolong, and Simanis' stories are stories of victims, particularly female victims of gender inequality, sexual violence, and poor healthcare access. The Indonesian Health Ministry data in 2015 showed that the Indonesian maternal mortality rate was quite high compared to the rest of the Asian Pacific region, and that these deaths could have been avoided had these women had proper care. The sexual violence within Sun Dobolong and Simanis' story unfortunately reflect realities of contemporary and Indonesian women, as in 1 in 3 Indonesian women aged 15 to 64 has experienced physical and or sexual violence in their lifetime. Perhaps Kuntilanak wouldn't be known to haunt soon-to-be mothers and newborns had more Indonesian women survived child labor. Had Sun Dobolong received good reproductive health care, perhaps her death could have been avoided and her and Simanis' search for justice made obsolete if her rapers had been adequately punished. These stories reveal the connection between violence against women and access to healthcare, but also tell us of expectations placed upon Indonesian women. In an increasingly Islamatizing context where good female Muslim piety is expected and socially rewarded, these ghost stories can serve as a reminder that one should walk the pious path of a Muslim woman and be a good mother or end up like the famous female ghost. Still, their stories can help identify problems Indonesian women face and how to overcome them. So we've discussed many different kinds of ghosts in Indonesia, and particularly female ghosts with stories of victimization and search for individual justice, and how Indonesia's history and culture is tied to how such beliefs are possible in an increasingly Islamatizing context. I'd like to end today by saying that these female ghosts, despite their horrible circumstances, still sought their justice. I hope the stories I've told and under moonlight today will make way for better futures tomorrow under the sun's rays.